Radio.
Radio.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm Gordon Smart. This is the Evening Show podcast. I hope you're very well. Thank you for finding this. I really appreciate it. Producer Joe is here.
I am, mate. How you doing?
Really good. It's been a busy week. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Enjoyed being on the radio, playing music. In a week where there's loads of other stuff to distract people.
Yeah, we've met some nice people.
Yeah.
And that's nice.
We haven't bored each other with politics. We haven't had any aggro about which vote you were going to make.
No.
None of that carry on. Just lovely people like Ewan Bremner, who you might know as Spud from Trainspotting, Alex James from Blur, he was on too. And on Monday night, I had a lovely chat about classic albums and a band that were very close to my heart back in 2004. Can you believe that? 13 years ago. Franz Ferdinand and their debut album. A lot of that chat on the Evening Show podcast. I really hope you enjoy it.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Okay, you're listening to The Evening Show here on Radio X with me, Gordon Smart, and I'm delighted to be joined by Scottish royalty. He's part of a gang, I think it's safe to say, who have conquered Scotland and the rest of the world for the last 21 years now. Ewan Bremner, a.k.a. Danny Spud Murphy from Trainspotting. Welcome to The Evening Show, sir.
Thank you, Gordon. Thanks very much.
If this has been a long time in waiting for me, I've been desperate to speak to you for years and years, and I seldom get starstruck, but the posters of you have seen things that should never be seen. In my life, and it's a bit odd having you looking at me right now. How does that feel for you, being in so many people's bedrooms for the last 20 years, watching everything that happens?
Honestly, I've been oblivious to it. I wish I could have been in so many people's bedrooms watching what's going on for so many years, but it was never something I really thought about.
Aye.
I'm sure Ewan McGregor was on a lot more bedroom walls than I was, that's for sure.
Did it open a few doors for you, though, is it fair to say? To say after show shenanigans, Ewan?
Absolutely. After show shenanigans, no, but I remember I was in a club in New York when the first film came out there, and it was so hot. It was like just the hottest, buzziest film that ever came out, and Johnny Lee Miller was in the bar as well. It was kind of like an after party for our premiere there, and a fantastic actress came up to me with her friend and said, I knew this actress, and she said, "I've just asked Johnny Lee Miller for a threesome," and he said no. and I thought, you didn't ask me for a threesome, and she wasn't going to either.
You thought you didn't say that, you just thought it.
I was too shy to say it, but no.
I'm going to have to ask you now as well, who is that actress? You're never going to share that in a million years.
I'm never going to share that in a million years.
You write down in a wee bit of paper and show me later.
I'll tell you later.
Oh, great stuff, excellent. Now, Ewan, for anybody who's been living under a rock, or indeed Gorgie, for the last 20 years, can you tell us a little bit about what Trainspotting 2 is all about? I mean, it seems daft even asking you, but I suppose we have to do this just to remind people.
Well, the original film was about a group of friends who were bound together by their history, and Irvin Welsh puts it really well. He says that the first film is about how powerful friendship is and how it binds people together, but it can also be very oppressive. And the second film is about how brutal it is outside the group, and it's not picnic outside the group either. And so you've got McGregor, Mark Renton, coming home back to the pack.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can't win. You know, it's brutal out in the cold where he's been, and it's brutal back in the gang. You know, the film T2 opens on a treadmill, the shot of a treadmill in a gym in Amsterdam, and Mark Renton is running hard, you know, busting sweat, and he goes crashing off the treadmill. But that's a good metaphor for where we're all at in the story. We're all on this treadmill trying to outrun our shadows.
Yeah. Well, that seems like an apt moment as ever to play a bit of Lust for Life and classic Iggy Pop. Ewan Bremner's with us from Trainspotting 2. More from him in just a second.
Radio.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was Iggy Pop for the Evening Show here on Radio X. I'm Gordon Smart. Ewan Bremner is still here. I'm very pleased to say he hasn't done one.
I've had lots of late night arguments recently about who Trainspotting 2 really belongs to. You know, I've heard arguments for Begbie, it's his film. Arguments for Ewan again, that it's Mark Renton. I've heard strong arguments as well, that it might be Sick Boy's film. But I'm thinking, and I think the consensus is amongst people I really respect, is actually about you and about your character in this film. Would you agree with that?
Well, it's great that there's so much diversity of opinion on that, because yeah. that's a real testament to Danny. To make a film that could equally tell the stories of four different people, give them equal weight, so that you're still asking that question or there's still debate about like whose story it was. Because the truth is, it's a really great balance of all our stories. Each character has a fantastic story through the film. And, you know, I really enjoy my story because my story folds in to the original movie in a really beautiful way yeah. and kind of turns the original film into the result of what happens in the second film. I don't want to give too much away if you haven't seen the film already, but there's a really clever twist in the tale for me from yeah. my character,
and it answers a lot of questions. A lot of Scots get asked far too often about why the film is called Trainspotting. Finally,
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
And now it's time to do classic albums.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week.
X.
So every Monday night we delve a little bit deeper into a classic album, an album that we love here at Radio X. Over the last few weeks and months we've done things like Manix, Everything Must Go, Stone Roses, Screamadelica by Primal Scream and many, many more. This week though, we're going to Glasgow for a bit of Franz Ferdinand and their debut album, Franz Ferdinand. It came out in February 2004, which has made me feel very old. And I know I always bang on about this on Radio X, but if that album was a human being, it would have become a teenager, 13 years old this year. So what can I tell you about Franz Ferdinand? Alex Kapranos was really the driving force, and he'd been in quite a few bands before Franz Ferdinand actually clicked. But before that, he was a chef, a barman, a music promoter, a driver, a welder and a lecturer. So it's fair to say he was struggling a wee bit trying to make the music happen full time. But then he happened to get to know a guy called Bob Hardy at art school, who was an English artist who was interested in music. And Alex was a musician interested in art. So they clicked. Then Paul Thompson got involved. He'd been playing in bands as well. He's the tattooed drummer with missing teeth. He's got a real look about him. But he'd earned his money as a nude model as well at the art school. And they all kind of found themselves in each other's company. And then the X Factor arrived. A fella called Nick McCarthy, a German musician who's a fascinating character, classically trained pianist, double bassist, studied in Munich and eventually found himself in Glasgow on the recommendation of a friend. Anyway, he was playing in jazz bands, they all got together and then all of a sudden the musical magic started to happen. I was digging through some old reviews of the album, there's some great stuff written about it at the time and I remember this very well because I was down in London and suddenly the Scottish band appeared on the scene and they were described, or this album was described as a masterpiece of funky, punky, suave, cool from the first track to the last. It was very sharp, I think it was about 42 minutes long or something like that, and the album went to number 3 in the UK. Take Me Out and The Dark of the Matinee made the top 10 in the singles chart and Michael made the top 20 as well. It then went on to win the Mercury Music Prize in 2004 and got loads of other nominations. It was in all the top 100s, top 10s of the best albums of the decade, and it was also nominated for the best alternative album at the Grammys, so it did very well. 3.5 million copies sold to date and Take Me Out has been played on Spotify 140 million times. How about that? There was some extra magic added to it by the Swedish record producer, a guy called Tori Johansson, and he'd produced The Cardigan, Suede and Aha. So it all makes sense when you start to put all the pieces of the jigsaw together. And I tell you what, it's got an unmistakable sound from the time as well. Chugging guitars like you hear in the intro to Take Me Out, the indie disco drums, and then there's that sort of quiet start to Jacqueline, which goes absolutely bananas just afterwards. I saw them loads in 2004, including at a working men's club in London, and it really was something special. They've got that sort of angular German kind of feel to them. And I remember seeing them as well at the Astoria, and it was like a London showcase for them in about 2004. And it's the first time I'd been to see a guitar band when girls were there going absolutely crazy to the music. It's something I'd never seen before. Right, this is Classic Albums on Radio X and a bit of Franz Ferdinand magic.
The Evening Show. Classic Album of the Week.
X.
Radio. X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
The Evening Show. Classic Album of the Week.
tell you what, that song's great, isn't it, Michael? People loving that as well. Kaylee Dawn got in touch. Love, love, love Franz Ferdinand. This brings back so many memories. Robert Weaver as well. This feature on Franz Ferdinand's eponymous first album is on now. It's great. And James Ash as well. Franz Ferdinand, sensational album. I think he's absolutely spot on about that. 2004, 13 years old, as I said. Thinking back to Take Me Out as well, it was in just about all those best song ever lists, including the 100 greatest guitar tracks in Q magazine and the 500 greatest songs of all time by Rolling Stone magazine. That's an amazing achievement when you think about it. In great company. Michael's got a track as well, isn't it? I remember Alex Caprano saying at the time it was all about a night out with the band with friends from Glasgow, and they went to this really dark warehouse dance party. It was called, I think it was Disco X, nothing to do with Radio X, because it was debauched to say the very least. And two friends got together, and what he said was a very sexy way. Alex Caprano saying that, it's got a different sort of feeling when I say it, very sexy way. Apparently the song contains a secret message as well, Michael. I didn't know this. 135 to 139. If you play it backwards, you will hear the words, "She's worried about you, call your mother." I like that. A little bit of mischief in the album. Really short and sharp, about 40 minutes of it. Franz Ferdinand's debut album, and it really did make guitar bands and music for girls to dance to at rock gigs, which I hadn't seen before. It's superb, and what a great act. They still are now doing some cool stuff with the likes of FFS, it's called, isn't it? The band that they've put together. Really, really good stuff. That was Franz Ferdinand, their debut album on Classic Album. If you've got a suggestion, get in touch for one next Monday night, 83936 and at Radio X. A double play from a classic album we love here at Radio X. Loads of brilliant music still to come tonight. I've got Noel Gallagher coming up and The Cure. Don't go anywhere.
The Evening Show. Classic Album of the Week. X.
You are listening to The Evening Show here on Radio X. I'm Gordon Smart, and we're joined in the studio by a very good friend, I think it's safe to say, of the show, late night collaborator, I like to call you, and a fellow fantasist of George Michael Nights Out. You know, that's how I always think of you. Every time I think of George Michael, I think of Alex James and our quest for a night out with him.
We did, one night after Blur played Hyde Park, you and I decided, I know it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah, we're going to George Michael's house.
Yeah.
And we didn't make it.
We never got there, you know, and that's the one thing, the late, great George Michael will never have our company.
I did think of you when he died, actually. I was terribly sad,
I remember just saying to the taxi driver when I was in Hampstead, he looked at me and he said, "Do you know where this guy lives?" I'm like, "You know, it's George Michael's house. He lives in Hampstead." No, couldn't take me there.
I did bump into Andrew Ridgeley shortly before Christmas, and we had a really good time, actually. He lives in Covent Garden now, where I used to live, because he was living the dream, wasn't he, with the Bananarama wife.
Yes.
Was Karen.
Ah, you're right.
Karen with an E. Karen with two E's. Yeah. And Bananarama are back. Yeah. They are.
You're excited.
I bumped into them the other night, and I was just like, wow. It's great, though, isn't it? I mean, it's lovely to think of bands that have been around for ages with just being estranged from each other. Because, it happened to you. It happened to a lot of my favourite bands.
Yeah.
Rolling Stones clearly hate each other.
Yeah, but they're getting on with it.
it's always so lovely. That's what I was saying to the girls. It's always so lovely when Blur get back together.
Yeah.
But just don't overdo it.
So, Alex, this is our annual interview to talk about the big festival as well.
All right. Well, I hope you'll come this year.
We've got to make it happen, haven't we? Because I missed the Cuban Brothers last year.
And the first thing we do every year, we book the Cuban Brothers. And we're like, right, we've got a party.
You've got another character booked as well. Madness are the main headline act, are they not?
Yeah, that's Sunday. We base it around the sort of three things: food and music and family stuff. So, like Friday's always a big dancey disco. Saturday's like really aimed at the kids. So we've got Ollie Muirs on Saturday, and then we'd have to have a heritage band or two on Sunday. So, yeah, Sunday's like Madness, De La Soul, Scatterlights are playing.
Oh, fantastic.
But Friday's going to be, well, Hacienda Classical on your radar?
Mike Pickering. Yeah, I went to see the Royal Albert Hall.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Incredible experience.
I mean, it's a brilliant. It's Mike Pickering, who's the guy behind M People, and then they're like, it'll either be Sean Ryder or Bez, we don't know which.
Interchangeable.
Peter Hook from New Order and Rihanna from the Mondays. Great. Yeah. And 25 piece orchestra, like doing all the hits. And so I think that'll really get things kicked off.
I do ask you this every year. How much do you get involved in the booking of the accent? Do you have to like, pick up the phone everything. And say, come on?
Oh, yeah, no, yes. I mean, every time I bump into any of Madness for the last 6 years, I'm like, come on, dude, you've got to do it. And actually, I think I must have got to them all by now.
Yeah.
So, I'm really, really pleased.
Well, Alex, let's play some Madness.
Yeah.
We love Suggs, we love the band. This is Madness on Radio X. You're listening to Evening Show.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was the Universal by Blur on the Evening Show.
We always finish with the set with that one, so I want a drink now. No, I've just said it's like,
it's a trigger.
It's a kind of Pavlov trigger. Yeah.
Oh, I feel terrible,
Let's
man.
Let's go nuts.
I'm just going to phone Alex's wife and tell her that he won't be home until Tuesday. Yeah, that was a bit of Blur. What does that emotion does that stir up in you, Alex, when you hear that song in particular, apart from going for a drink? Because it must remind you of magical times.
When we were doing it all the time, we were really unaware of what a special... Because we went straight from college to playing to like 300 people, and then a couple of years later, you're playing to 3,000. Then 5 years later, have a fight with Oasis, you're playing to 30,000. And then I think we played to like a million people once in Rome. It was crazy. Yeah. But you sort of lose all sense. It's just like what you do every day. But like moving to the country, having five kids, not doing it for a while. And then when it sort of flips back in now, it's sort of like being dragged off by an ex-girlfriend, kind of all mussed up and sent back to my life kind of slightly confused. But no, I mean, it's I think we all probably get on better now than we ever have done, actually. Yeah. And it's just lovely, because there's no reason to do it than because we want to,
yeah.
I mean, we spent so many years playing together. It sort of seems to click back together. And I think actually, like the big acts these days, like most of them, it's kind of singer-songwriters playing with backing musicians. There's something about like a kicking it rock band who've played together for years and years. Yeah. And I suppose that's one of the downsides of the current state of the music industry. The bands don't really have time to develop.
Yeah, and that's the thing, it was 6 years, wasn't it, from Seymour to Blur, really? Was it Park Life?
Yeah, I mean, tonight we won 4 Brit Awards for Park Life. I had to go to the studio next day, and I didn't have enough money for the tube in my pocket.
Really?
We're still skint. Yeah. It's like Jeff Hurst mowing his lawn the day after he won the World Cup. Yeah. Can you imagine Adele having to get the tube to the studio the next day? You know, I guess... Things have changed, actually.
It does feel like you're the last generation of genuine rock stars to me as well. I mean, maybe that's just me being slightly older now. I don't know.
I think so the rock, there's 3 options for the rock gentleman these days. You know, you die, you write operas, or you go and live on a farm. And I think I went to live on a farm, and then I put on a small festival, and I thought, this feels really good.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, what's the sixth year?
This is the 6th one. So it's a hell of a lot of work, and we're already planning next year's. You know, next summer's event, but there's always moments when it's all. I remember seeing a shipping container full of Lego being craned into the front field a couple of years ago, and all the kids were like jumping up, and all my kids jumping up, like much more excited than they ever were at a Blur concert. And I was like, actually, yeah, this is working.
That is a sign you've made it in life. A shipping container full of Lego in your front garden. Alex, you're going to stick around a little bit longer as well.
Absolutely, darling.
More from Alex James in just a second.
Radio X,
the Radio X Evening Show. With Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
You're here with us today because the DVD's coming out. And you've done a really solid 6 months of work on this, right? So I've got to ask you this. Is there one question you haven't been asked yet that you'd like to be asked?
I don't know. I'm happy to be still talking about this, Gordon, like 20-odd years after it first came to birth, from Irvine Welsh's stories. I've kind of been asked everything about it. I mean, I usually get asked what the stuff was made from in the breakfast scene where I spray the family with a certain substance. I don't know. So, I mean, that's probably the most common question. People are fascinated with that. Like, what was it made of? Was it real? And which is quite amazing that people think that it might have been.
Yeah, that level of detail.
Yeah. Well, we had to do that scene so many times and to spray like sort of, you know, 3 actors with real excrement would be like, a bit out of bounds.
You do have to do quite a lot of the scatological, or say the grottier stuff as well, because there's a really harrowing scene in this where you end up covering your own vomit and rescued by Ewan McGregor. That looks like a really hard scene, and then in classic Danny style, I suppose, it then turns into a bit of comedy as well. I don't think it's an easy thing to do, surely, but again, you know, you got that hard part. I mean,
well, that was a scene that me and Danny talked about a lot when we were leading up to shooting, because as it stood in the script, there wasn't any there wasn't really any gross out moments that the people loved from. I knew people loved that from the first film because yeah, people would come up to me all the time about that.
Yeah.
But the second film, as it was being prepared, it didn't really have those moments yet. So I was suggesting to Danny that this would be a good opportunity, like, to plug something in here. And so, you know, we were talking about vomit and projectile vomit, and and he was like, really, he had this image of this polythene bag, and it's actually, it does a lot. It's not just funny, it's not just sad, it's absurd. And it was very tricky to shoot, just technically, to get, you know, to get it to look like, you know, I was vomiting at the right moment.
Yeah.
And I wound up getting waterboarded by a compressed air jet of vegetable soup up my nose into my sinuses. So for days I was wandering around with like canned cold
Oxo cube in your head.
Yeah. In my sinuses. Yeah, trying to get it out of there.
Yeah.
And we had to shoot it a lot of times as well. It was quite a nauseating few days.
Oh, that sounds brutal, actually. It does sound brutal. I think it's probably a good opportunity to play another song as well. So we're going to play Born Slippy just in honour of that lovely lubricated moment in the Trainspot 2 sequel. Here it is, Born Slippy, Underworld. What a song this is.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
How much of the music did you know about when they were making a film the second time around, and I suppose for the first time as well?
I knew very little, and everybody was asking Danny every day. That was like one of the major questions on people's lips, or what's the soundtrack going to be? And I had plenty of friends who got bands and stuff writing to me, emailing me, saying, can you get this to Danny? Can you get this to Danny?
Oh, it's difficult.
Yeah. And I love Danny, and I really respect him, and our creative relationship has certain parameters. I didn't really feel comfortable going to him with stuff that people were pushing on me.
Aye.
So I kind of stayed out of it, but I know that we were all asking him, like, Johnny's a huge music head, and other boys too. And so we knew, we were in the middle of a rehearsal one day, and Danny suddenly leapt out of his chair, like, because his phone was buzzing, and he said, sorry guys, I got to take this. And he ran outside and he came back and said, yeah, that was just Iggy Pop on the phone, and he said yes. So he'd given his blessing again to this collaboration with the Prodigy, which did their version of Lust for Life, or you know, a collaborative version with Iggy Pop. So and also I think Iggy's been a real sort of saint to the film anyway. He's very supportive of Danny, and seemed to sort of open a lot of doors in the music world for Danny as well. So we didn't know, we were desperate to know, but he's done it again. Nobody thought he could do it again, but he's done it again.
It comes over loud and clear. The music's superb yet again. It must have been so difficult to follow. I mean, the acting piece must be hard enough, but get the music right, that's a pressure, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd love to be witness to how he inspires you to act as well, because I think you've created something completely unique in the performance of Spud. Right? At the Scottish words, glake it, you know, that kind of look, you have created that. How much of that was you, and how much was Danny sort of eliciting that kind of response from you to be that character?
Well, I'd say Irvin Welsh really put his finger on the characters in a... You know, I'd never done drugs like speed or anything. So my input into that... I've got this scene that's become quite popular where...
Your pleasure is my leisure.
Yeah, nice. And I'm interviewing for a job and I'm high on speed. But I didn't know what that felt like. Mm-hmm. I knew what it felt like from reading Irvin's words.
Yeah. Have you got any good mementos at home, Spud, that you've taken for yourself? I'm going to call you Spud for that reason, because...
I'd say I have somehow managed to keep something. I keep trying to give it away or not give it away, but I was speaking to our producer recently about a charity auction, and he said, no, keep them, which is the glasses.
Aye. Aye.
So somehow I've got them at a top secret storage facility.
Well, in a locker at Waverley Station with $4,000 in cash. If you auction them, let me know because I'd buy them. What's on the DVD extra, just to let people know before you go?
There's some great stuff with Shirley Henderson, who plays my partner Gail. Absolutely gorgeous performance from her. And also from Kelly MacDonald. There's a lovely scene with me and Ewan. We were kind of mirroring the original film where we go shoplifting together. We go on a spree, a Chorian spree up in town, they call it in Scotland, Chorian. And so we did a really nice little mirror scene to that where we do another spree up the town and go try and steal an iPad.
And I've heard you asked a couple of times, but T3, 20 years' time, is there any more mileage in the idea of the retirement home?
Let's hope our clocks are all still ticking then, and you know, I'm sure as old age pensioners we'd be delighted to get back together for a final hustle.
Oh, Ewan, it's such a pleasure and an honour to have you, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Gordon.
Trainspotting 2 is outstanding, it's brilliant. Get the DVD, it's out now, and I'm sure it's a very, very competitive price. And if it's not, just steal it from John Mingus on Brunson Street. Ewan, thanks very much, all the very best.
Brilliant, thanks, Gordon.
Zero Radio.
Radio
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
This is an evening show here on Radio X. I'm Gordon Smart, and I'm very pleased that Alex James has managed to survive through to another section of this interview. Even when we're only 200 yards away from the Groucho, so it's a success for both of us.
Do you know what? I did move to the country 15 years ago, but I've sort of built a big shed as part of the festival in the back garden, and Groucho Club are going to be running the bar in there at the big festival this summer. So I've actually built a Groucho Club in my back garden. I'm not sure if that's wise.
Anybody who's read Alex's book will know that the Groucho played a significant part in the shortening of your life. I think it's the safest way to put it, Alex. I've got to talk to you more about the lineup, because you have put together a crack, yet again, a really, really good lineup for
I think people kind of know what it is now. You know, we started off 6 years ago. It was really quite, it's like, you know, I remember that it was like you could get it all on one piece of paper. The PR's just given me this year's line, and it's like literally a telephone directory. So, you know, there's music, but it's really as much about the food and the family stuff as the music. So I think we've got almost as many Michelin stars as London for the weekend, like Prue Lee's coming, which I'm really pleased about, and who else we got? Mark Hicks, Rick Stein, Nathan Outlaw, and so it's like everything from sort of sit down banquets with Michelin star chefs to street food, like, you know, I mean, actually sometimes all you want at a festival is like a burger, but a really, really good burger. I guess it's like I'm aiming at people who came to see Blur play in Reading in 1993, who sort of like me now have probably got a few kids and like their cheese, their wine.
Because it's a big thing, isn't it? Because finding a babysitter for 3 days for you to go and survive or put yourself into the experience of Glastonbury, if you can go and entertain the kids, worry about losing them.
If you can keep the kids happy, then mum and dad are happy. Yeah, so, but actually, like, the first year we did it, my eldest kid was 7, so he's like 13 now, so we don't want to kind of want to lose the teenager. So we've sort of built a teenager's lounge this year, so where they can plug their phones in and
be moody.
Be moody, basically.
Put Morrissey on for them. I mean, that's the thing is that as every year goes by with the festival, is it hard to kind of keep it under control in terms of the size? Because there must be an expectation for it to grow every year.
I think, I'm not sure that the sort of mega festival is the future, actually. Yeah. I think the probably kind of fairly boutique-y events with a kind of really clear proposition of what it is, rather than just these sort of massive, unwieldy things where, you know, it takes half an hour to walk from one side to the other. So, yeah, I think that the thing is there's 750 festivals across the UK each summer. The festivals have become part and parcel of the Great British Summertime. I mean, it's incredible, really. I remember the first time I told my mum Blur were doing Glastonbury, and she looked absolutely horrified, you know?
Because the
news announcer would come on the local news and say, hippies attempting to celebrate the Glastonbury Festival have been apprehended by police. And it was all sort of a little bit dark and scary, but they've really become part of the mainstream. And, you know, actually, my mum never misses festival now. Yeah. And, you know, I do think the best party is where you've got, like, granny dancing with the kids.
It's one of those things as well. I think we've both been soaked 4 times today, right? And the weather in Britain, we seem to just get on with it regardless. regardless. And how much does the weather play in your mind for this one?
Do you know what? I think when you're starting an event, you need a run of good luck with the weather. But last year we had the most cataclysmic thunderstorm I've ever seen. Like, it was like a once in a generation thing. When the rain broke out, I was with Robert Richards, who's one of the guys who runs Glastonbury, and he was like, "Don't worry about it, mate. It never lasts when it's heavy." I mean, it really absolutely came hammering down. But what I've learned actually is it's quite good if it rains a little bit, because people, when the sun comes out again, it's like feeling.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, yeah, look, just, yeah, I think, I mean, kids really don't care if it's raining or not.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm Faithless on Radio X. I'm Gordon Smart. Alex James has survived about 20 minutes in my company without drinking.
Good to see you, Gordon.
Yeah, party. It was brilliant. I always love seeing you.
I'm going to try some of your whiskey later. That looks amazing.
I would love to get your expert opinion on it. A mix of 8 single malts. I think it's one of those drinks that's not meant to be pretentious anyway, so you can mix it with whatever you like, including cheese.
Well, whiskey and cheese they really go well together. Yeah, I mean, it can depend on the... It's very subtle. It's sort of like high-energy physics, because, you know, if you change the flavour profile of the whiskey ever so slightly, it can suddenly be catastrophic. But when you get it right, it's an explosion in the mouth.
I was so pleased. Oh, Alan Partridge. I was so pleased to give you a gift, Alex, because you've been so generous over the years. Right? I feel guilty for all the great tickets you've given me. You once gave me a wheel of cheese, which I can't remember how heavy it was, but it was an operation to lug it around. And it got lost in East London at 5 in the morning in a Christmas party. And somebody must have found that and thought, "This is unusual." Wheel of cheese.
That was a good night. I remember doing the conga slightly before the cheese went missing.
Yeah, there was a conga through. Mm. Yeah,
we should do conga at Feastival, actually.
Should we try and break the
world record breaking?
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Is there anything else about Feastival this year that's new? Is there any anything that you're particularly proud of that you've
this
sorted out?
I'm rushing home shortly to start excavating an enormous barbecue pit. If the health and safety police will let me, I'm going to attempt to roast an entire cow.
Wow.
I think that's the plan. I think that'll be really good. That'll feed a few hungry mouths.
Certainly. Well, I'll have a leg. Alex, it's such a thrill to see you, as always. I'm really genuinely going to come this year. Because
bring the kids, bring the missus, man. They'll love it. They'll love it.
4 Scots added to the lineup who will drink and eat you dry. Alex, all the best for Festival this year.
Cheers, Gordon. Nice.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was the Evening Show podcast. I'm Gordon Smart. You have been listening in with me and producer Joe. If you enjoyed that, please leave a review. I'd be very grateful for that. And also tell as many of your friends as possible and get them to tell their friends and their friends. You get the idea. I'll be back with another Evening Show podcast next week.
Radio X.